Please stand for the pledge of the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please remain standing for a moment of silence. Please keep in your thoughts and prayers all of our brave men and women in the armed forces who are deployed all over the world who will not be home with their families. Also, in your thoughts and prayers, please keep Walter Dunham in your thoughts. Walter is now residing at a nursing home in Farmingville. I had a chance to visit him, and he's very frail. And but he's thrilled that he's in Sachem, and he was really happy that he was next to the new high school. You know, he was the one who bought all the land that we built these buildings on. He had that kind of foresight. So please keep him in your prayers also. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Please be seated. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes? Who is that? John Siegel? Can I have a second, please? Rob Scavo? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. We have some recognitions and achievements. Girls East soccer team.
Carrie, you want to step up? Good evening, Mr. Pomar, Mr. Boddy, and members of the Board of Education, Dr. Murphy, and members of the administration. Tonight is a special night as we honor the accomplishments of our Sachem East girls soccer team for winning the right to be titled 2006 Long Island Class AA Girls Soccer Champions. Highlights of this spectacular season include 20 consecutive wins, a team ranking of number one in New York State, and a national ranking of number five. I'd just like to take a brief moment and share a story with you while I was attending the New York State Girls Soccer Tournament in Cortland. A gentleman comes over to me after the game. He's a member of the tournament committee. And at the state championship games, the tournament committee, you know, is very actively involved. And there's probably about 10 people there who oversee the tournament for that particular game. So a gentleman comes over to me and he says, you know, I've been involved for quite some time as a committee member for the girls soccer tournament. This was one of the classiest teams and coaching staffs I've ever witnessed in a state tournament. The girls never gave up. They played hard and continued to display positive and good sportsmanship. The coaching staff was professional throughout the whole game. He goes on to then say, I wish I could say the same for all the teams that come and play in the tournament. You should be very proud of your program. Sachem has class. To the girls and the coaching staff, just so you know, we are all very proud of your accomplishments. And it says a lot about character when someone on the outside recognizes your accomplishments as well. You are all champions. And now I ask Mr. Foreman to come to the table, please, and introduce his team.
Welcome, Ralph, and congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Job.
Thank you. I would also like to introduce my assistant coach, Laura Zimmerman.
Congratulations, Laura.
Actually, her parents came here, too, to watch this.
Okay.
All right. Before I introduce the girls, I'd like to thank Dr. Murphy and the Board of Education for recognizing the girls and taking time out of your busy schedules. We really appreciate that. Thank you. All right. What I'd like to do is first introduce the seniors. Some of them are not here. What I will do quickly is, if anybody earned any postseason honors, I'd like to mention that as well. The first player is Captain Daniela Burns. Okay, Daniela's sitting up, at the podium. She was a New York Scholar athlete, an all-county academic team member, an all-league player, and an all-conference player. Valerie Frischling was a defensive player on our team. Jackie Guilfoyle was also she was actually a starter at times in some of the games as a striker. Christy Lawson is here. She is a New York Scholar athlete, an all-county academic team, and exceptional senior team member. And you'll see she wrote a wonderful article. It should be in our email very soon. Alright, next is Jennifer Russo, who is a New York Scholar athlete and all-county academic player. We have another senior, Jessica Sandy, exceptional senior team. Tony Ann Sessa, exceptional senior team. Stephanie Sohn, who is a New York Scholar athlete, an all-county academic athlete, an all-league player, an all-conference player, an all-county player, and an all-Long Island player who will be attending Notre Dame. Another senior, Caitlin Symancic, was on the exceptional senior team. We have Kelly Williams, who is an all-league player. Tiffany Ovino, who was one of the captains and a New York Scholar athlete, an all-county academic player, an all-league player, all-conference, all-county, Suffolk County Player of the Year, all-Long Island player, all-state first team, and an all-region player, and she's going to Hofstra on a full ride. And the defensive player, Tina Ziegler. That rounds out our seniors. Our juniors, Justine Bonadeo, who is a New York Scholar athlete. Stephanie Fleming, a New York Scholar athlete. Laura Green was one of the other captains, and she's also a New York Scholar athlete, an all-league player, League One Player of the Year. She was our all-conference, all-county, MVP on the Long Island Championship game, and all-state third team. Kate Kamiatek is a New York Scholar athlete. Samantha Reinhardt, she played defense for us. Christine Sinesis, New York Scholar athlete. And now our sophomores. Katie Corfee is a New York Scholar athlete. Okay, an outstanding defensive player, Kelly McCabe. Megan Moore, New York Scholar athlete and all-league player. Angela Monaco, New York Scholar athlete, all-league and all-conference player. Morgan Rabella, she is an outstanding striker and also a also outside player on the midfield. Jennifer Ray, New York Scholar athlete. Courtney Seltman, an outstanding midfielder. Christy Lynn Wilkin, our goalie and New York Scholar athlete. This is the League One, Suffolk County, and Long Island Championship team. Thank you.
If I could just have a quick second, please. Coach Foreman? Gail, don't go too far.
Gail, would you let the parents know when they can flash pictures too so they can get up close?
Before we take a picture of our excellent team here, I'd like to say a few words about our coach, Mr. Foreman. He stepped into a position that I'm not so sure if he knew what to expect at the beginning of the year, but like many of the players of the team and the high honors that they won, Coach Foreman also received some terrific honors. Coach Foreman received League One Coach of the Year, Suffolk County Large School Coach of the Year honors, and then to round out the season, he received, as we all saw in the newspaper this week, Newsday 2006 Long Island Coach of the Year honors. Congratulations, Coach Foreman.
Thank you, ladies, and congratulations. Daniela, you're a force to be reckoned with, huh? Wow. Congratulations.
I'm going to call up John Alexak, Principal of Sachem High School East. Okay, Dr. Mike's here? Oh, there he is. Do you have the certificates?
Is this working? Hello? Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, members of the board, Dr. Murphy. We're here tonight to recognize a very talented young scientist. He was recognized by the Siemens Foundation as a regional finalist in this year's Siemens competition in math, science, and technology. This competition was formerly known as the Siemens Westinghouse competition, but just this year they dropped the name. I've had the student in the research program for 4 years, and he's impressed me every single year. He started as a ninth grader right here at Sachem South. I think it was the last year that was in existence. And he did a project on his own right in the research classroom. It was a medical microbiology project, and it was very creative the way he came up with the idea. It was looking at how ultrasound could influence antibiotic resistance in bacteria. And he got some very fascinating results. But he carried that project through a couple years, and then before his senior year, he wanted a different experience. He really wanted to work in a research lab at a university, and really with thoughts of a future in medicine, he really wanted to pursue biomedical research. And so this past summer, he participated in a research program at Stony Brook University, very prestigious program, very competitive, hard to get into. It's called the Garcia Polymer Center. What they do there is they do a lot of chemical engineering for many different applications, including energy research, materials science for safety. They work on a lot of things related to bioterrorism. But they also do a component of biomedical research. And my student was interested in looking at manipulating stem cells, okay? And that's kind of a hot topic, stem cell research. What he wanted to do is basically look at ways of manipulating stem cells for tissue engineering for various diseases. And so last year we spent a lot of time when he was a junior talking about ethical issues concerning stem cell research. Fortunately, pretty much every week there's new discoveries and findings that you can take certain populations of cells from adult tissue and use them instead of using embryonic stem cells. So it avoids a lot of these ethical issues. And so what he was able to do in the material science lab was create artificial cell surfaces. And then with support from Dr. Simon in the Living Skin Bank Laboratory, my student was able to form a collaborative effort between the Polymer Center Lab and Living Skin Bank in order to take these stem cells. And they're actually derived from subcutaneous fat, adult adipose tissue. So if somebody goes in for a liposuction, normally they would take that tissue and it would go into surgical discard. Well, instead, you can isolate a population of cells and demonstrate that they can actually be manipulated to form various cell lineages, such as muscle cells, cartilage or bone, okay, maybe even nerve tissue. And so this was very important research. Towards the end of the program, he had some good, interesting data. It wasn't a lot of data. And the director of the lab recommended that he pair up with a couple of the students that were working on kind of similar goals, similar aims, but distinct. So my student focused on the adult stem cells. One of his team members was from Texas, and his interests were looking at these engineered surfaces for studying characteristics of cancer. And the third student student from Nassau County on Long Island, and she was specifically putting bone cells on, looking for tissue regeneration of bone. And then they wrote this, they formalized this work as a team and presented in Austin, Texas in early November, and they did an outstanding job. And so I'd just like to welcome up our Siemens regional finalist, Benjamin Macaluso.
Anyone from his family, say, would you please come up too? Come on. Come on up, Mom. And then you can take a picture later. Congratulations, Benjamin. John Alexak? High school principal, Sachem.
Good evening, Mr. Papara. Excuse me. Good evening, Mr. Papara, Mr. Boddy, members of the Board of Education, ex officio members of the board, Dr. Murphy, members of the cabinet, guests and visitors. Recently, Sachem High School East teacher, Mr. James Berger, was designated as a WLNY-TV 55 Educator of the Week. This recognition was well-deserved since Mr. Berger is incredibly devoted to his profession. He is an inspiring educator who mixes humor and common sense as he designs lessons that deliver the curriculum to his students, yet still finds time to be involved in many after-school activities. Every year, Mr. Berger serves on the building leadership team, which strives to improve the entire school community, and he was instrumental in reestablishing the Renaissance program in the school, which maintains the student store and operates to reward student academic achievement and citizenship at Sachem High School East. All of Mr. Berger's students rave about his sense of humor. He manages to create a classroom atmosphere where students feel comfortable and are willing to take chances. He is always self-effacing and respectful of students' rights. Like any good teacher, Mr. Berger seeks to find students' strengths and cultivate them, while trying to develop those areas where the students may be less capable or talented. Mr. Berger has embraced the new technology that is available in our building, and he has mastered the use of the electronic Jeopardy game as a teaching device in his classes. And he has also created a PowerPoint presentation that serves as the end-of-the-review program for all of his students. In addition to serving on the building leadership team, Mr. Berger is also the advisor of the Strategy and Tactics Club. This is a much sought-after club that has a wide appeal to a diverse segment of our student population, and for many of the students involved, this fosters an extremely positive social environment for them. Finally, Mr. Berger is one of the coordinators and instructors in the after-school SAT preparation class. In closing, Mr. Berger is a team player whose positive attitude is infectious and appreciated by students, parents, colleagues, and administrators. And at this time, it is my pleasure to introduce to you Mr. James Berger, WLNY-TV 55's Educator of the Week.
Congratulations, sir.
Congratulations, Jay. Thank you very much. Visitors, we have Stephen Majorca. Steve?
Bitterly, but I should not
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, members of the board. I'm here tonight because I'm senior at Sage North High School and currently working on my Eagle Scout project. My project was to renew 8 benches at the Samoset Courtyard. If you've seen the courtyard lately, to me it's kind of a mess. I've been talking to Ms. Kavanaugh about it. She was very thrilled and excited about me doing this project, and hopefully I'd be able to. My idea was to build the 8 benches, to renew them. Also, to plant hosta lilies to beautify the courtyard, and to help the flagpole area, because that's also a little mess, and I would be surrounded with rocks and make it a little bit neater. I found out the cost estimate would be around $400, and I would fundraise to cover all the money. It would cost the school no money whatsoever. All expenses will be covered from me. Like I said, I talked to Ms. Kavanaugh about it. She is the principal of Samoset Middle School. She was thrilled about it. And that's what I would like to say. If there's any questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Does anyone have any questions for Steve? Steven, did you meet with Mr. Bergen, Mr. Mike Bergen? He's our facilities manager yet, to go over the project at Samoset?
No, I did not.
Okay. Ms. Kavanaugh, she emailed me a few days ago, and I just said to her, as long as Mr. Bergen approves it and everything meets the specs of the physical plant, I think it's a go for the project.
Okay.
And we'll get it on the next agenda.
Okay. Thank you.
So, Mr. Bergen's right over there, and you meet with him, explain the project, where you're going to do it, and if he gives me the thumbs up, we'll put on the next agenda to go.
Okay.
Thanks very much, Stephen.
Thank you very much.
Stephen, thank you. And that's a great thing, becoming an Eagle Scout. Congratulations. We have a consent agenda for business items for items D1 through D2G. There is a correction, though, on bid awards. The letter E should be no award, not awarded. Okay? On the bid awards, letter E should be no award. It's not awarded. Okay? We have it as approved, but it wasn't. Is that correct, Bruce? Okay. So with that being said, can I have a motion for consent agenda items D1 through D2G? Rob Scavo, second, please. Deborah, thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Personnel items. This is also a consent agenda. It's E1A through E6A, which will take us to page 11. Can I have a motion, please? Dave, thank you. Dave Arnold, second. John Siegel. Discussions? Questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Action items. Carol, you ready to go?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Approval of the recommendations from the Committee on Special Education.
Can I have a motion, please? Dave Aronow, second. Mike Boddy? Oh, Fred Teneri, I'm sorry. Fred, you threw your voice. That was good. I thought you were Mike a minute. Fred Teneri is the second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Acceptance of the revised policies as listed as a first reading.
Can I have a motion, please? John Siegel? Second is Doug. Thank you, Doug. Are there any questions? Go ahead, Tony.
Dr. Murphy, we have on a future agenda item, discussion on purchasing. And I'm just wondering if the policy revision or the policy acceptance would be a little in advance of the discussion, or if anything is derived out of the discussion, can the policy be revised?
Well, right now, Bruce and I spoke in general about some of the things the board was looking for in this new purchasing discussion, but I think it was more of the vision of that office for the future, to upgrade from paper purchase orders maybe down to the computers and present it in that respect. So this isn't going to have any effect on that type of discussion.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. We're on page 12, everyone. Item 3.
Sorry. Adoption of the revised audit committee policy number 6690. This is the second reading.
Can I have a motion, please? Who was that? Rob? Thank you, Rob. Second? John Siegel? Any questions, discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Item 4.
Adoption of the policy of admission of non-resident students. It's a revised policy, number 5152, and it's the second reading.
Can I have a motion, please? John Siegel, second. Doug Duncan? Any questions or comments or discussion? Tony?
Dr. Murphy, we've had a decision recently by the Commissioner of Education on a policy on residency. Does this at all affect this policy that we have?
We could have a policy, and Chris Clayton can chime in. Our policy could be this, but they can appeal, and the commissioner can rule in converse to our policy. I believe that's correct, Chris. Yeah, right now our policy was clear on that decision, but the commission ruled that student is to be considered a resident even though they're not a resident.
But we're keeping the policy as is, and
is that this policy is actually going to tighten up our procedures even more, and it's going to be very specific.
Right, thank you.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of a change in mileage reimbursement rate.
Can I have a motion, please? John Siegel, second. Douglas Duncan? Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of changes to the membership of the building leadership teams.
Can I have a motion, please? Rob Scarborough, second. John Siegel? Any discussions, questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of Regents test dates.
Who is that? Douglas? Motion? Thank you. Second? Fred Teneri? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of extracurricular clubs and activities for the 2006-2007 school year.
Can I have a motion, please? Rob Scarborough, second. Fred Teneri? Any discussion or questions? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of a donation from SEPTA.
Can I have a motion, please? John Siegel, second. Fred Teneri. Any questions or discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Appointment of part-time committee on special education chairperson for the 2006-2007 school year.
Can I have a motion, please? Deborah Slinkowski, thank you. Second. Who was that? Douglas Duncan. Any questions or discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Approval and agreement between the Sachem Central School District and Nick Schroeder, interim transition administrator.
Can I have a motion, please? Deborah, thank you. Second, Mike Boddy. Any question or discussion? All in favor? Thank you. We're on page 14, folks. Item 12.
Approval of Sachem Teacher Center Policy Board Members for the 2006-2007 school year.
Can I have a motion, please? John Siegel, second. Douglas? Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of the Sachem Teacher Center Budget for the 2006-2007 school year.
Can I have a motion, please? Don't be shy, folks. Somebody step up. Who was that, John? Second. Thank you, Rob. Rob Scarborough. Any questions or discussions? Deborah?
I'm not sure that we should move forward and expend this money at this time. Seems to be a large amount of money. Is this going to be within our budget for years to come? I mean, is this generally...
The $104,000 is given to us in a grant, so it's not coming out of taxes. In addition to that, the Teacher Center generates thousands and thousands of dollars in revenues from their in-service classes that they give. So there's really no expense to the local taxpayer.
Thank you, Charlie. I wasn't informed that it was a grant. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of the Sachem Teacher Center Instructor Salary Agreement for the 2006-2007 school year.
Can I have a motion, please? John Siegel, second. Rob Scavo, any questions or discussions? All in favor? Opposed? We're on page 15, item 15.
Approval of Sachem Teacher Center personnel for workshops and in-service courses for the 2006-2007 school year.
Can I have a motion, please? John, thank you. John Siegel, second. Douglas Duncan, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Mini contracts. This is a consent agenda from F-16 through F-16D. Can I have a motion, please? Deborah, second. Fred Teneri, any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Okay, Carol. I'm sorry, I jumped on you, didn't
That's
I?
That's quite all right.
I'm sorry.
Approval of the mid-year community education program as presented.
Can I have a motion, please? Douglas, can I have a second? Rob Scavo, any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Appointment of ESL teachers for the Title III funded after-school tutoring program.
Can I have a motion, please? Deborah Slinkowski, can I have a second? Dave Aronow, thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Appointment of ESL teachers for the Title III funded ESL for Adults program.
Thank you, Dave. Second. Deborah, any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That was item 19, folks. We're on item 20. We're on page 17.
Approval of the appointment of advanced placement test coordinators for 2006-2007 school year.
Can I have a motion, please? John Siegel, second. Dave Aronow. Thank you, Dave. Any questions? All in favor? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Approve the appointment of a school safety team.
Motion, please. We have a duet. All right, you're first. Deborah, ladies first. Deborah Slinkowski, second by Rob Scavo. Any questions? All in favor? Thank you.
Approval of an alternate superintendent's hearing officer.
Can I have a motion, please? John Siegel. Second is Douglas. Duncan, all in favor? Opposed? Page 18, item 23.
Approval of the resolution to reappoint emergency conditional appointments.
Can I have a motion, please? David Aronow, thank you. Second. Fred Teneri. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of a donation from the Suffolk County Stop DWI.
Can I have a motion, please? John Siegel, second. Douglas Duncan. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Monthly reports. Any questions on the damage and loss summary? Determination of from the committee on preschool special ed and child care, community education, building usage, financial report. Are there any questions on any of those? And any questions on the Board of Education subcommittees? Okay. Board of Education goals is item 5 on page 19. Our goals are on page 19, item 5. Any questions on any of those goals? Presentation and discussions, 2007-2008 school budget vision. and we have capital projects. So let's start out with the budget, 2007-2008 school budget vision. Charlie, who's...
Yeah, I'll take that. But okay. Before I start the school budget vision, I know we did a number of presentations today and recognize a number of people out there who've done some good things, the soccer team, the teacher, and the student. And I know that Daniela Burns, our student ex officio here, was recognized as Sachem High School East soccer team and being on that Long Island team. And I noticed Edward getting a little jealous that Daniela was getting a little bit of attention today, but just want the audience to know that Edward Christian, our student ex officio from Sachem High School North, was just recently accepted to an Ivy League school, Cornell University in Ithaca. So congratulations, Edward.
Congratulations, Ed. I have to tell you, we did lie to Ed. We told him that Daniela had a scholarship to Harvard, but she turned it down. So that really, we took the win right out of Ed's sails. But Ed, that's terrific. Both of you are terrific young people. God bless you, and we're so glad that you're part of this. Thank you very much. All right, Charlie, you're on. Give us good news.
Good news? Let's see, John, did you get this going? If not, I'll just sit here. Is it all right? Okay.
You don't have like a stand-up or something? Like
yeah,
you're going to sing? All right.
I've been honing my
honing
scene
your
all week.
Okay, go for it. Go for it. And there'll be no booing, though.
I just wanted to present the vision, what we're doing this school year with the school budget. In the past, we've presented the budget, and we really haven't discussed about, well, what's the end product. Last year, we inherited a budget where we had to make $12 million out of cuts. And coming into this school year, we really, admittedly, the goal was to just pass the budget. And we're in rough financial straits last year. We started to add back some of the key things that some of the community members had asked for when the board president, board vice president, myself, and some board members went around to the different PTAs last year. They spoke about kindergarten aid, they spoke about hallways, they spoke about the lack of opportunities for kids at the high school with the extracurricular activities and the JV9 being cut. We added those back, and we tried to enhance the opportunities for children in the school and try to provide a better educational program last year with the budget, which is difficult under the times of where we faced in 2004-05, now we're in 2005-06. But we're starting to see a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. So we want to start to talk about, well, reduce $12 million, we're going to start adding back. But what areas do you want to start adding back and enhancing our budget the way it should be? Last year we dressed a little bit with class sizes, but there's a lot more to go with the class sizes. At the elementary level, there's still some class sizes out there, 28, 29, in the fourth and fifth grades. We're looking for next year to taper that back so we have appropriate class sizes at the elementary. In addition, you hear a lot of things about the high school in 2004-05, that we had many high school classes over 30 students. This year, we have very few classes that high, and we've reduced them. We want to continue to reduce them, especially as we move towards more heterogeneously grouped classes. We've taken out some of the classes that are not as rigorous, but with that, we've got to bring down some of the class size at the high school level, so that with the mixed students that are in each class, that there's a nice number for the teachers to work with. We visited Harvard this year. We did a lot of school visitations, and we went up to a school outside Boston, and we've done a lot of research about instructional coaches. As we look towards the 07-08 budget, we want to start to add in instructional coaches to work with our staff members. In a school district like Sachem, we have a lot of issues that go day-to-day with administration. Instructional coaches can address many of the daily issues of instruction without the administrators being there all the time. In a school like Sachem High School East, which John Alexak is the principal of, there's issues day to day that pull John away from where he'd really like to be, which is in a classroom. But with all kinds of student issues, all kinds of parental issues, all kinds of discipline things that happen on a day to day basis, John can't get in the classroom. His assistants can't get in the classroom on a daily basis to work with teachers. We're proposing next year and into the 3 to 5 years from now to add instructional coaches to help out. So if a building administrator is pulled away from a problem such as a threat or a bomb threat that could take sometimes a week to solve, we have someone working with teachers on a regular basis, no matter what goes on administratively. They're there working with the staff in a non-threatening manner all the time. So instructional coaches are part of our school vision to improve instruction into the schools. Last year we added some academic support classes. We're going to continue that into that vein next year at the high school level, and where we're looking to add in English language arts at the high school level, adding similar supports that we did at the middle school level this year. So we're going to continue to work on academic supports to get those high school students graduated. As you know, the high school graduation requirements have increased. We need to support those lower-end youngsters to make sure that they can attain those higher standards. In sixth grade, there's a risk period that's presently in our middle schools. In 2004-2005, the budget went down, and in order to make things work, unfortunately, we pulled a class that the sixth grade kids were in, and we created what's called the RISP, which is a Reading Independent Study Program, which is really a study hall. And it's been running for 2 years. It's not really an instructional period. During that period, it's really the run-of-the-mill middle kids who are in that class. The gifted kids are in GATE during that period. The remedial kids are in their NEIS classes, math and reading. And it's really the middle-level kids who are just at a study hall. Well, it's nice to get a catch up on study hall before the school day ends, but this is an instructional time, and so we should have an instructional period. Next year, we're proposing to bring back the instructional period for those grade 6 students, and we hope to have a math enrichment course so we can prepare more of our middle-of-the-road kids for 8th grade algebra. The program is being worked out with the chairs at this time and the middle school principals. But it's more instruction, more enrichment, more problem-solving strategies, more math, so we can bring those middle-of-the-road kids up to the next level so that they'll be prepared for algebra in 8th grade, just like our accelerated kids. Staff development lines in the district have been decimated over the past 4 or 5 years. Our teachers are one of our most important assets in the school district. We have to put a regular investment in what they do. We used to have a budget in staff development that was near $900,000, and it's really been reduced down to $200,000-$300,000 in the past couple of years. And we're really at bare bones when it comes to reinvesting in our staff. So we're going to start to add back in that line so that our teachers can be prepared to teach the students of the 21st century. Library books. Again, we've been struggling for the past 04-05, 05-06. We're now starting to see light at the end of the tunnel. We had a big purchase of library books for Sachem High School East when the new library opened, and for Sequoia Middle School when the library new opened. But the rest of the schools in the district, the library funds were cut, and they really had about $385 across the district on library books in the district this year. That has to change for next year. We're proposing to add back more money for library books. I mean, you can imagine all the books that have been torn and ripped up and that had to be discarded for overuse this year. You've got to each year continue to replenish those books in all of our school libraries. So that's an area that really needs to be addressed over the next couple of years. But we're going to add back this year and continue to work on that so our libraries are with, you know, rich literature and the resources necessary for our kids to be successful. Special education. There's lots of fun in special education. Special education has a vision that they're going to present at the January meeting. But one of the ideas is to reallocate some resources down at the kindergarten level to be proactive in how we address our kids' needs, identify our kindergarten students early, and start having some of our special educators work with those students from the get-go, the time they walk in that first day of school, and put a lot of emphasis on kindergarten, so when they go into first grade, you're not providing remedial services, you've already provided proactive services to address their needs early on. So it's an early intervention program that special ed will talk about in January, but we're going to be doing some things and adding some things back into the budget
in the next couple of years to address the needs in special ed, but being proactive about it rather than reactive. A more comprehensive summer school. Because of the failed budgets and the reduced budgets the last couple of years, we've had a, what we call summer school light. 2004-05, we didn't even have summer school. Last summer, we had summer school light, which was provided summer school for 7th and 8th grade students so they can get to the high school, and 11th and 12th grade students so they can get out of the high school. But you have many kids who end up repeating grades and end up taking courses twice. Those 9th and 10th graders end up taking the course over again the following year. So what you think is a savings initially by cutting out summer school actually costs money when you have to bring the student back and create extra sections in your school to address those kids the following year. Because just because they failed 9th grade and they didn't go to summer school, then they're going to have to take 9th and 10th grade English the following year. And there's a cost to that. But the more comprehensive summer school at the 9-12 level and as well as at the primary level, we want to enhance what we're doing with our elementary students as well as our high school students with a more comprehensive summer school program. Wayne Wilson has presented about security this year and our security needs. It was only in the beginning of this school year, so we had about 8.5 security guards at each high school. We've added back two. We're now at 10.5 security guards at each high school, and we used to be at 16. We have a lot of security needs. A lot of different things have happened in the last couple of weeks that John Alexa could attest to at his high school. Similar things happen at Sachem High School North. The bigger security presence, the more comfortable kids feel about coming to school, and the easier it is for them to learn. And we want a safe environment for our kids. We can create all the instructional programs in the world, but the kids don't feel safe there. It's not a great learning environment for them. In addition, we want to do some things with our roving guards at night. We have two on it now, and we'd like to do some more things. But again, these things cost money, and we want to look for the next couple of years to start adding back security for our school district. Parents will be very forgiven if test scores go down in the district. They won't be forgiven, so forgiving if something happens to their children at high school and they get hurt or something worse, and we had a way to prevent it. Central registration, Mr. Stellino is going to be speaking about this in the next couple of weeks at his special ed presentation. But in order to protect our district from outside residents coming here and utilizing our services, we can share some of our resources and pool it together from all 18 schools, plus add a little bit back into the school budget to do what is called central registration. So at Samoset, we would like to create an office where we'd be able to register all the people that come into the district new. Presently, they do it at the 18 different school buildings. And even though you have criteria laid out, when you have 18 different people or more registering children, some people get through with documentation of which is not proper. So we feel if we have one person, one office doing it, we'll be able to cut down and curtail the people who try to sneak in and use our services, which is a big cost to the taxpayers. And so if you have internal moves or external moves, they'll have to go through central registration. And what is initially an investment, because you'll get lots of savings back on saved resources. Athletics. One of the things we added back last year was athletics at the JV9 level. We'd like to create more opportunities for the middle school teams. You have people trying out for volleyball, basketball, softball and baseball, where these kids are never going to get the opportunity to play. We're not proposing to bring back all the teams that were here in 2003-04, but if there's a need and there's a team that's overcrowded, to add back to that team. And that's going to happen in some of the sports I named just now, where they're having difficulties. They'll take a lot of the kids. They don't want to do any cuts, but the kids are never going to see they're never going to get themselves off the bench, and they're going to experience what I experienced in 7th and 8th grade in athletics. You know. I can show you baby pictures to help out. Administration, during the 2004-05 school year, we cut back two district office administrators. We're proposing to add back one in the near future. to help us out. You know, district office gets a lot of work done, but there's some projects, some areas that we'd like to put a closer look at, but we just don't have the resources to do that, and we're able to get that in there. In addition, for the next couple of years, is equipment and maintenance. I spoke a lot about this at our budget presentations last year, about adding back school buses, adding back snow plows and maintenance equipment. But it's not just maintenance equipment that needs to be replenished. It's not just school buses. We have security cars out there that we used to buy from the county at their disposal sale. We used to get them at $500. We've been told recently we're not allowed to do that anymore, so our security cars that are out there are, you know, 10, 15 years old. We have to start adding back into some of the security vehicles, some of the maintenance equipment, some of the transportation equipment that's out there, and we're going to continue to fund those budget lines so that we don't have equipment breaking down and our people using or our students riding on ill equipment, and it's just not safe and it's not effective when you have things broken down. And as we were gearing up for reconfiguration, those lines were decimated to get us over the hump. But now we're dealing with all this antiquated equipment and vehicles and things like that, and we need to start to look at replacing those things. And if you do a little bit each year, you don't have to do a gigantic order down the line. Just a little bit each year, you start to rotate through these things. For example, last year we bought 3 buses. I propose we're going to buy 3 additional buses this year, 3 additional buses in 08, 09, and again, so that you have a good fleet of buses that the students are riding on. So those are some of the things that when we're looking at a vision of what we need to do with our budget, we're looking at a lot of instructional things over the next couple of years to add back, and that's the key. And then you start to look at some of those other things of just taking care of our needs in the district. But the big thing is instruction, reducing class sizes, starting to add in academic coaches, and continue to do things that are going to support our students so that they do graduate with those new New York State graduation requirements. So that's where we are. Again, $12 million taken out. We've done a few enhancements last year, and not what I would have liked to have done last year. But again, the goal is to create a program that's educational but affordable for the community. And we had a 1.6% budget last year, one of the lowest in the state, and it only passed by 1,000 votes in this district. So people are still wary of anything you're going to put up. But I think we'll start to gain trust if we do it with education leading the way and affordability right behind it. So that's the vision for the school budget. I don't know if anyone has any questions. Bruce, do you have anything to add?
Are there any questions from any of the board members? Rob? Charlie, regarding the instructional coaches implementation, what is your plan for implementing them, number one? Number two, how does this affect the teacher mentor program? What is the difference between instructional coaches versus teacher mentoring program that we have in place already?
Well, there's a lot of right now, and you can talk to the board and the audience, there's a lot of unknowns right now in the budget going into next year. I don't have a handle on what retirements are going to be, you know, what staffing is going to be. There's still the unknowns about, you know, settlements of contracts. There's a lot of unknowns out there. And state aid coming in for next year, you know, it would only be a guess at this point. But instructional coaches, we'd like to add things back there. We're looking at trying to have a math coach servicing the entire elementary school teacher population, one math coach, and we're looking at multiple English language arts coach, because that's where our big need is at the elementary schools. Our elementary math scores are among the highest in Suffolk County. We compare just about any school district in math. In English language arts, we're not doing that well. We should be doing a lot better, so I'd put more resources in that area. At the middle and high school level, we're talking about, again, English language arts, math, and possibly some other disciplines for the future. But again, it's all going to depend upon what the numbers start to pan out and what we can afford to do. And I don't want to get I don't want to get greedy and put in more than what we really need, but what's really appropriate for the school district at this time. Instructional coaches can support a teacher mentoring program, but they're not a teacher mentoring program. We have a mentoring program we're starting to hone every year. It's getting a little bit better, and that's really in cooperation with the Teachers Association and the personnel and instructional offices. But those people, those coaches, can be a benefit for new teachers and to mentor them along in the classroom, give them suggestions, be a support, and it's just another way to help out in the school. But it's embedded staff development, which is a lot different. We do staff development workshops for our teachers. Some we do on our own, where it's no cost. Some we hire a consultant or an expert to do staff development. But after we do it, for example, we created we had new curriculum in English language arts at the elementary level. They've had a few workshops, but then it's, you know, good luck, and the principal will come in once a year to see you. A coach could come back to schools and work with staff in a non-threatening manner to really be there each day to help support the instructional program of that particular school. But it would be more helpful for those new teachers to help them along because they need it the most. But it's not the mentoring program.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Douglas?
Dr. Murphy, in regards to administration, in the future, could you provide us with some information on some of the comparable districts to us, what their administrators, how many they have, and also could you provide some information related to our current administrators as to what the job descriptions are for the positions we have now?
Well, I could just share with you that the Suffolk County DA had done a report, the grand jury report, and they produced a very comprehensive document. And they went through many of the school districts, and they listed out, and they were coded. Each school district had a code about how many administrators they had in that particular school district. If you read the report, I can't remember what number we are, but say we're X number. If you compare us to any other school district around, we had the lowest number of administrators in our district compared to the number of pupils or staff in the report from Suffolk County, the Suffolk County DA. And last year, News 12 did a report and compared Sachem to Brentwood on a number of administrators in the district, and you know, we were given a favorable report by News 12 compared to Brentwood. So we really don't have a lot of administrators compared to the number of teachers or students in this district when you look at countywide and that ratio. But I'll share that information, and I'll send the board a copy of that DA report and show you what number we are. And there's lots of graphs and charts you can look at to, you know, when you see radio station manager, that's Sachem. I mean, because we're the only district in the county with a radio station.
Deborah?
Dr. Murphy, do we have an estimated cost?
For this wish list? I haven't costed it out, but as we go through our budget presentations, we have six of them, we'll start to talk about things that were in the budget. If we're doing the budget and we're sitting down and we're looking at the numbers and what we deem is important, we'll start adding them in there and letting the board know the enhancement we've put in there, and we'll show reductions if we do reductions, the reductions that are in the budget as well. So a lot of it depends upon the staff and staffing. We don't have the staffing numbers yet for next year. The high school program is going to go out. Paul, when is the high school program going to go out? Right after the holiday break. And once the students submit it, then you submit what classes they want to be in, you start to get an idea of how many sections we're going to need and create. And that's usually, we get those numbers firmed in by the end of February, and then we'll have a real good idea. But we're going to start our budget presentations at the beginning of February. And I'll let you know that every enhancement that we make, we'll talk about. But some of them are automatics to me, library books. $385 for 14 schools in the district for library books just seems a little bit low.
Thank you, Deborah. Any other questions? Okay, capital projects.
Bruce, do you want to...
Sure. Thanks, Charlie. I don't think anybody from the Capital Committee is here, but we've had a few meetings in the last few weeks, and the Capital Committee came to a consensus that the amount of work to generate it, but picking the architects, picking the construction manager, putting the priority list together, which Mike Bergen and Ed Miller presented, is going to take more amount of time than they can squeeze in before the legal deadlines to have it approved by the architects, the attorneys, come back to the Board of Education. So they don't believe that they're going to meet the May vote. They would like it to extend it beyond that. They don't have an actual date, but it would be probably September, October, sometime like that. So their request to the board at their last meeting was an acknowledgement, if the board is in agreement, to push not to have it concurrently with the May vote. The cost of that is about $60,000 to hold an additional vote. But they felt $60,000 in the anticipated vote of a $20 million bond issue, and to get the reliability of the costs of these projects and the interviewing the architects, that it was well worth spending the $60,000. So they were requesting to the board, that was their first thing. The second item that we've been spending the last few weeks on is the development of the RFP for the architect and the construction manager. The attorneys are making the last changes, and we should be sending it to the board in the next few days. And if the board puts the blessing to those two RFPs, then we'd like to go out to bid to begin that process. So the first matter they'd like to bring back to the board is if the board is in agreement to pushing off the bond vote to the after the budget vote date.
Questions? There was three board members have been going to these meetings. Maybe some of you might want to comment on this. John, then Tony, and who else has been going? Ross?
Excuse me.
You went to one? Okay,
go ahead. I've been to a number of these meetings.
All right, go ahead, John.
And I have to agree. The Capital Committee has been working hard trying to move things forwards, but, you know, none of the people on that committee nor myself want to see a repeat of what happened when we rushed construction projects. You know, I think we've all seen what happens, and we don't want a repeat of it. And, you know, speaking for myself, you know, I'd like to see us go into this with our eyes wide open and know what projects we want, pick the right architect, and have the real cost for these projects. So, you know, I'd be on the same page with the committee to extend the budget, extend the bid date for this.
Tony?
No, I agree with John. Again, one of the problems we had with the last bond was rushing to a date rather than looking at everything a little closer, and I think that's important. So I would be in full agreement to holding off till after the budget vote.
Anyone else have a comment? I have a question. I know there are a number of pressing issues that have to be dealt with. Is that correct? Mike, is that correct? Do we have items that would have to be part of a capital improvement or whatever as far as this upcoming budget? If the board's in agreement with moving this whole bond thing back until the fall, and it makes sense, you know, and I have to acquiesce to the board members who have been going to the committee, to the meetings, but are there issues that need to be dealt with, you know, at this budget vote? Do we know that?
I guess if the board decides that they're going to slow down, let the committee go through things thoroughly, which, because there are good reasons to do that, and one is just to build consensus among the committee and then the community, we can come up with a list of things that we may need to add into the present budget to that need to get done. And I'm not sure if you can think of anything right offhand, Bruce.
The timing, I don't know, unless the board is willing to hire an architect right now. We have an architect of record, but they will submit their application as interviewing for the architect of the big bond issue. We would have to hire the architects right now to submit the plans to SED, and we would still be on the hook to paying the architect even if the budget is defeated.
Well, Bruce, for example, we have the H2M booklet that $4 or $5 million of additional projects that we didn't deal with. Those have been estimated already. Could those be some of the ideas, like a replacement of an oil tank at facilities? You know, there's an issue over there about that oil tank, and now the drivers are filling up at transportation. Is that something that could be added into this year's budget rather than wait for community approval and then 2 years down the line to get this finally done?
Yeah, the gasoline tank, which Charlie's talking about, is where the maintenance mechanics fill up at the facilities. The Suffolk County Department of Health closes down, and there the mechanics are filling up at the bus garage. To push that up 2 or 3 months, we could get an estimate to see if the architects, how long it would take to get out the bid. We still need community approval. We'd have to wait until May anyway. But we don't have the authority.
Mike is asking, is there anything right now that's so pressing the community needs to approve so we can get it done
My question, really, the basis for my question is, I don't want something like, you know, the Winona roof is a great example, you know, where it had leaks and we patched it, and to have had that made the blue book or whatever book it should have been in, you know, it would have cost us a lot less money to get that done. It would have been finished by now instead of us dealing with it. Now that turned into costing us a lot more money. I just don't want to see us push everything off. If we can, and it's not going to cost us a lot more money, you know, down the road a piece, because now what we're talking about, if we're talking about there being we move this line, and I agree with what Tony and John were saying, you know, we want to go into this with our eyes wide open. I don't want to rush into anything. But at the same time, if we have any items that are pressing us right now and that in the long run could cost us a lot more money to get fixed because we didn't take care of it, I mean, it's just common sense that we would, you know, we would try to include that in this budget, hopefully get it passed and take care of these things immediately. Because what we're looking at is, if we're waiting to the fall, then we need to get approval and so on. Then we need to go out and we need to, I think, what's the minimum, 45 days or something that you have to go to the public and before you can have a vote. And then we're talking about another year or year and a half before we get to some of these things. So my only question, and I don't need you to, you know, because I didn't mean to put you on the spot either, Mike, before or anyone else. But my only question is if there's something that needs to be done and can't wait, then we should definitely, you know, address it, put it into this year's budget. I hope that we'll do that, you know, and not nickel and dime it to run it so that, you know, it becomes part of this other big bond issue that we're dealing with. Let's take care of things that need to be taken care of. And again, you know, I acquiesce to the committee, the construction committee, and I agree with them 100%. We need to take our time, get into this, and look at what needs to be done on these other projects. But let's take care of things that need our immediate attention. John?
Mike, while we're, you know, instead of pushing it off to the fall, yeah, I think maybe we should set a little bit better of a goal, maybe to get it done over the summer.
John, I don't know. You know, I haven't been to any of those meetings, so I'm trusting, you know, I'm counting on you and Tony and Rob or whoever else has been going to these meetings to, you know, to come to us and say, hey, look, you know, this is doable. You know, if you say to us, you know, we need to wait till the fall, then, you know, that's something, you know, we'll have to make a decision on. But my whole thing is, I don't want us to nickel and dime things. If you know, let's not put ourselves in a situation where something has to be fixed, we don't do it, we put it off, and then it ends up costing us two times or three times as much to get it done later. So, and you know, and I trust the judgment of all of the gentlemen and ladies who are involved in this to come up with a list and bring it to the board. If that, you know, if that list does exist, if it doesn't, then that's great too. Tony, you have another question or comment?
Well, the only comment I have is, and I agree with you, Mike, but I don't think, I think the superintendent is well aware of any health and safety items that have to be done. It will certainly be put in the capital line of this upcoming budget. And I'm sure he's not going to let anything go. He's learned, as we all did, with the Winona project, and I'm sure, again, that will happen. Even if, and my understanding is, even if we hold off till after the budget vote and put another vote up, nothing's going to be done this summer. I doubt if we can get anything done this summer.
I think we got burned with that last year. We promised we're not on a roof, and we didn't fulfill the promise because the time it took the architects to draw the plans, right, done SED. So I think for us to sit here, we're going to get something done in this summer. We got burned by that last year. That's an impossible promise.
It's not going to happen, and the thing is, when we rush to do it, then that's where we have...
I'm not saying to rush to anything.
The answer, I think, is if anything is that important to the superintendent, we'll put it in this current budget. And again, we even have problems doing it this summer, even if it's in the budget, as we know. Getting architects, getting SED approval, it takes months. So, but that would be the quickest, and I'm sure the superintendent will put anything like that on, in that for discussion during budget time.
It's really delaying it for about 3 months. I mean, 3 or 4 months of a delay. It's not an extensive period of time. We're looking for maybe a September vote. Wasn't that some of the conversation, Bruce, is to try to get it done?
Right. Generally, we don't want to have a vote during the summer because not many people are around, and it would be a difficult outreach to the community during summer months. Generally, votes are held if a capital vote would be in the fall.
It would be, you know, past experience is that it would be October, November before we could get a vote out because, you know, not only do we have to get everything approved and plans and so on, then we have to get out to the community and let the people in the community know exactly how much it's going to cost. And we're going to have to make the rounds and let folks know. Because the bottom line is people want to know, well, how much is it going to cost me out of my pocket? And I know we have and you folks have said that the we have this aid issue where we can turn $5 million into $20 million, and that's a good thing, you know, it's a great thing for what we need to do. But I think, you know, people have to understand that, and we need the time to do it. So, but we're going to have to get, we can't reach out to the people in the summer because these folks are going to be on vacation and who'll be doing what and be running in 100 different directions. But if we put off the committee and whatever has to be done, you know, and move this and say we can come to a consensus, then we need the time to get out and sell it.
Well, the best time to sell the budget would be the bond vote would be in September because you have the PTA meetings to start off the year are teeming with people. And we'd be able to at least reach out to a large group of people and let them know what the story is.
Mike had a question.
Dr. Murphy, is it your intention to keep the budget line, the construction budget line, the same next year as it was this year?
The
capital projects line.
We can do some things and add back capital projects, equipment, school buses, that whole line. We intend to do something with it.
Okay.
I think we're all on the same page. It's just, you know, semantics. And I'm comfortable with what you've told us. And is there anyone else who has any questions? Doug, do you have a question?
And my question is to Bruce. If for argument's sake there are two pressing issues that need to be put on as part of our budget this year, those issues can't be put on the RFP then as well, right? So if the budget gets voted down, we're kind of in a bad situation again, right?
We would have to retain an architect to develop the plans and specs, and we would have to pay that architect out of this year's funds. Whether the bond is approved or even the budget's approved or defeated, I mean, just as Mike Boddy's suggesting, even if we keep a capital project line in the budget next year, if that's defeated, we won't have the money next year to pay for the architect. We don't have the money for the project or the architect. So the board would have to know. We in any event, we'd have to pay the architect for the work they performed. But that brings me to another pretty significant point that the committee has come to the realization in the past bond issue, the sitting board at the time did not want to pay the architects prior to the bond issue because of fear if the bond was defeated, they didn't want to pay for those services. The committee came to the realization that we must pay for the architect and CM services to validate the numbers prior to going to the committee, to the community, and that whatever the architects and the construction managers come to, we have to pay for their time and their efforts. And that is part of the reason that we gave that information back to the attorneys. They're developing a new RFP, not the one that we used for the bond issue, but to consider paying for services rendered, and we would have to put that money into the budget, even if the bond issue is defeated, and it could come to about $100,000 of architectural services that they're going to need to render to develop true cost estimates, timelines for developing these projects. That was another significant area of discussion with the Capital Projects Committee.
Sure. Go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, I think that's an important point that Bruce is making. One of the problems that we had last time was we paid very little for pre-design. And what happened, we got what we paid for. There were a lot of things left off. A lot of things weren't fully looked into. And then we saw it happen when they got into the project. Then they found it. It was too late. We had to pay more change orders. That's where our problems were. So in listening to the committee, we have some bright people on there, construction people, said you've got to pay these architects to look at the whole project, not just walk by it and say, well, this is approximately what it's going to cost. So, and I think that's an excellent idea. And pay, you have to pay for what you get, because otherwise you're not going to get anything, and we're going to wind up paying for it later on. So that's a good point that Bruce made up, and I certainly agree with what the committee has come up with.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the Gate Library was the perfect example. Perfect example. You know, they walked through, looked at it, said, yeah, it's, no one wanted to spend the money to have them get into the walls and so on. And then once the walls were open, then the nightmare begins. So, you know, I'm for being fully prepared and doing whatever we need to do. John, do you have another question? I'm sorry, Deborah, I didn't see you. Go ahead.
You know, we have a two-page capital projects list, and I guess they're going through all the projects that we want to see completed over the next few years with this referendum. I'm assuming they're prioritizing and they're costing everything out. Now the question to me is, are they going to be able to cost out all of these projects by September?
The committee is not charged with costing out the projects. The board would have to hire an architect. That you're requiring extensive, detailed work. There's takeoffs. There are different trades that are HVAC, electrical. It's well beyond the scope of the committee. All they're going to do is making a recommendation to the board to change the RFP that we hire somebody to cost it out, and that's going to be part of the interview process. Can you cost out, and just briefly, we went over Mike's list, and the priority ones, which were only the first few pages, and Mike's list was maybe 20 pages, was probably exceeded $20 million of the estimation of the gentleman sitting in the room. So they need the experts to tell them. You need engineers to go into the field, you need estimates, and people just do this for a living. And it's very time intensive. Very labor intensive. That's why you need to pay, the board needs to realize the extent of what we're asking the architects and why the value comes to about $100,000. Tony?
Yeah, that's, listening to the committee, I was a little surprised looking at that priority list, the three or whatever, how many pages there was. A couple of them said there's no way $20 million is going to cover this list. And of course, these are not, you know, perfect yet, but right off the bat, they said this is much more than a $20 project. So the board's charge later on is going to be, when this list is prioritized, what goes on top of this list, because the $20 million is not going to go very far according to what we're saying. So, you know, we can look at, like Deborah says, this is a big list, and pricing everything out, and maybe, and again, I haven't spoken to anybody about it, maybe we ought to price it out by priority. Because we're going to price out everything at the bottom of the list, and what's the point if we're not even going to get to it? If we get to $20 million halfway through the list, we better stop there. So that was a good point, and maybe it's, and again, I think, and Mike, I don't want to, maybe at some point we can rotate board members sitting at this committee. You learn a lot from these people, and they're very interesting, and it gives some insight to board members when they're sitting at these meetings to listen to these men and women talk. So I would suggest, if it's possible, that we could rotate once in a while, and say, I'd gladly substitute.
Okay.
So that's a good point.
Thank you. Any other questions? Deborah?
So if they're only charged with a partial list, can we get the referendum up at budget time?
That was not the consensus of the committee. It's not a partial list. They're saying the $20 million is going to take... Well, first, we didn't select an architect. That's probably a month in and of itself. The interview and the construction manager, actually. So we're probably a month away before we can make a recommendation, probably in mid-February, to the board. And then if the board wants to interview the architects on top of the subcommittee, that will be up to the board. Any other questions? John?
Okay, at the last Capital Committee meeting, there was a big handout that was given out, was priority 1, 2, and 3 projects. Can we get a copy to everyone on the board?
Sure.
And the other question is, should we be giving the committee some direction? Because there were 20-odd pages in that book. Maybe we should be telling them, look at some from here, here, and here, and you know, maybe we can get this referendum. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen for budget time, but at least let them start looking at the projects that somebody's deems priority.
I just thought we would start from the top of the list. I mean, I wasn't at the meeting, so I would imagine that would be the logical thing to do, wherever the number one priorities are. But it's up to the board. I mean, what kind of direction do you need? Bruce,
when we already got, if the board is comfortable postponing the bond vote and separating from the budget vote.
I think, is everyone okay with that?
Yes.
Why are you doing that? Why are you shaking your head? Do I have to have a motion or something? What am I doing wrong?
She doesn't like the double vote. That's what's coming down.
Oh, you don't like the double vote.
Oh, gee. You don't have a number yet, Mike?
I have it. Oh, trust me. If I'm doing something wrong, she goes, shakes her head. So double vote's fun. You'll like it. But anyway, does the board agree that at this point we should really take our time, have the upfront work done, and get into this with our eyes wide open? Is everybody okay with that? Is that okay with everyone? Yes? No? Is the second thing I should ask you, are we all okay with, and I know Charlie's going to do this anyway, but, we should give him our blessings that if there's anything that needs immediate attention, that, you bring that to our attention as soon as we can, and let's do whatever legwork we need on that. So if that has to be included as a capital line in this budget, that we include that. Is everybody okay with that? Yes? 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 John?
The question about that, I know Mike Bodie brought this up. Now, it was my understanding, I think it was the last board meeting, the one before that, that this $1.9 million that was put in the 05-06 budget for capital improvement was being taken out of this coming budget.
It's one shot, right.
Correct. So
we may have some other ways to do some one shots as well.
We may have to, but as of right now, we had committed that it wouldn't be in this year's budget, be a one shot.
Right, and we could have some other one shot revenue to do that with. No, that's what I'm saying to Mike. I don't want to really get into it until I have firmer numbers, but I believe in order to enhance some of the equipment, facilities type of things, we could do some other one-shot items. Remember, we saved a heck of a lot of money this year having that school aid specialist come in here, as well as the other additional refunding come from the bond. So that was unanticipated monies that we... during the summer that now we have.
Okay, so we're all okay with the administration and the facilities folks and everyone coming to us. If there's anything that needs our immediate attention, they'll bring it to us and we'll be okay with that. Is everybody all right with that? Tony? Deborah, you have a question?
Not a question. I just wanted to make a statement. I do have some reservations about, adding this money into our budget and having the taxpayers pay for these capital projects when they should really be cost-free when we get the referendum passed.
Deborah, what I'm asking folks to say is if there's anything that needs immediate attention, health and safety issues, that kind of thing, that's all. Nothing other than that. Are we okay with that, folks? Yes? Yes? Okay. Is there anything else that we... You're going to move ahead with looking for the architect, going through that whole procedure?
Yeah.
Project manager also?
We'll try to put together a loose time frame for the committee to work with and say, well, this is our goal. The goal is October-November vote, so we'll have some clear deadlines to say. If they don't have recommendations, you know, then we got to go to the board and have the board make the final determinations.
Mike?
Yes.
Dr. Murphy also. I know that package was roughly 20-odd pages that we were discussing. I mean, can we also maybe give the committee some direction on which projects to start looking at?
We don't even know the cost of any of these things.
At the last meeting, the board requested that Mike Bergen break it down by trade. It would be easier. So, like, all the cement work is on one page, all the oil tank work is on one page. So it would be easier for them to digest it because the ladies and gentlemen in the room have particular skills and interests. So Mike is preparing that, and it is the same list that John's talking about. It's just that we'll break it down a little bit differently. It'll be broken down by trade.
Yeah, but if we're going out to an architect and a construction management firm with 100 projects.
No, the priority ones, that was direction that Mike was given last week. That they estimate that that's probably going to become near $20 million. So, I don't know if it even makes sense to go up to the twos and threes at this point.
But I think some twos and threes are going to help the bond get passed. So, I mean, you know, maybe that something has to be looked at also.
Those are board decisions.
Okay, this is a discussion that we'll get into as time moves on. So, is there anything else, folks? Deborah?
A few weeks ago, since we're on capital projects, and so I don't forget, a few weeks ago I spoke to Chris Clayton with regards to a preferential clause in our bid language. Did you get a legal opinion on that?
Yeah, and I want to pull the section for you, Deborah. There's the question just for the board was whether or not we could include within bid specifications some form of preferential treatment for local businesses. There's an understanding, obviously, based on a conversation we had the last time, that, you know, once a bid goes out, we cannot exercise some discretion to award a bid without that specification in it to a local business over the lowest responsible bidder. And Deborah and I had some discourse about that topic. And, you know, to my eye, Deborah, there's no mechanism by which we can, I think, circumvent our responsibility to award to the lowest responsible bidder. John and I have also had some discussion about this topic. He's raised with me a few issues in private sector contracts where they have things called MFEs, I guess, and we're going to look into that as well. Okay. No problem.
Thank you. Okay. Let's move on to visitors. Tom Calabrese.
I'd like to make a couple of comments on the budget process coming up. I guess it began a little bit tonight on your comments, Dr. Murphy, because I'm concerned about two things. One is the content of the budget. The other is how it's presented to the community. Obviously, the content is important because that's what we're going to get. How it's presented to the community is going to determine whether the voters approve it. I would like to see is you're presenting some educational enhancements put back into the budget. We haven't had them. Last year we didn't have them, and it's a big concern. In getting these enhancements and getting the voters to vote on them, I think we need to be very straightforward with the community this year. And that concerns me because I don't think we have been in the past. And some of the terminology tonight concerns me and how the voters are going to pick up on that. For example, when we talk about $12 million in cuts, that's not from a budget. It may be from wish lists, but our budget has never decreased. In fact, our last year's budget went up $14 million. even when we voted down the 18%, we had an increase. So we haven't had $12 million in cuts from a budget, maybe off a wish list, but not a budget. And I think it's a little misleading, and we got to be straightforward on it. When we talk about a 1.6% increase, that wasn't in the budget. We had a 5.6% increase in our budget. We had a 1.6% increase in our taxes. Now, that other, the difference, we're going to have to make up this year. How are we going to make it up? I guess one-time hits. That's going to be your decision. We have over $8 million in one-time hits, which you're going to have to decide. And I believe in the construction area, it wasn't 1.9. It was closer to $2.5 million in one-time hits. But again, I'm concerned how this is presented to the community, and I think it's going to determine to a large degree if the community accepts it. I know you've spoken about, you know, failed the outcome and the results of failed budgets in the past, and we've had them. But I'd like to remind yourself and the board that the last big budget vote we had that went down was for an 18% increase, an 11% increase. And you can hardly blame the residents for voting that down. So I think to a very large degree, whether a budget gets passed is going to be how responsible it is. Does it have the educational increases? And have the items we put forward been prioritized? Because there's going to be a lot of items on a lot of wish lists. And again, my feeling is education has been at the bottom of that list for years. It's time to bring it up. I do have a concern as a taxpayer that we're going to get hit hard this year. And I think it's something you're going to have to deal with as a school district because, as most of you know, our town taxes are going up. So we're going to get hit there. We are getting hit there. We know our school taxes are going to go up at a minimum of 4%. I think that's a pretty good bet since that's contingency. We know that there will be a bond to follow, and we know that it's not going to all be free money. And we began to say that. And I think it's very important to identify how much of that is not going to be free money. So we get an idea up front of, you know, what is our real tax bill going to be this year? Not that we get it in bits and pieces. We're going to have contracts settled this year. I guess we have a union rep over there. And any tax contract that is agreed upon will be in addition to the budget money unless it's included in the budget. So you guys could hit us with three increases next year. You could layer it. And we're going to get our town increases. And at the end of the year, we could get hit by four increases. That'll bring us double-digit increases on our taxes. And I think if voters see this happening, your budget will be voted down. So I think we have to be very honest, not only in terms of this budget, but in other expenses that are coming down the line, and that we've really prioritized the items based upon the real needs. And I think there's a lot of residents in the community have felt that, again, education has been put at the end of the list for many years. That's all.
Sal Nicosia.
Good evening. I extend to each of you and your families a happy holiday season and a healthy one. I just wanted to react to the proposals, the visions of Dr. Murphy relating to central registration. 22 years ago, I happened to have been the first central registration director of the Patchogue School District, and we centralized the district then, and I can tell you that since that time, it has proven to be very valuable to that particular school because I worked there for a number of years. And I would suggest that if I can be of any help or liaison with the school itself and see what kind of benefits you get from having a central registrar. Because one of the first things we did that year when we formed the central registration and we had one person, we were able to look at all the credentials that were necessary. And one or two people were looking at it rather than 14 different or 16 different. And I think that's something that's very good. And also, We did an extensive census that year. We were able to do a census and found some very interesting revelations that this district might find, since it has borders with several other districts that we may be having problems with, the, let's say, the Longwood area or the Patchogue area, the Sayville area, that particular aspect would then be in the hands of a particular person who would be accountable to have to come here and answer to any questions.
Thank you, sir. Next, any future agenda items, folks? Anybody want to ask? Yes, Douglas?
Mike, this is something that Sal and I have spoke about a couple times, and Sal brought to my attention. Several other school districts are having these sort of informal meetings of the Board of Education with their graduating seniors and kind of having an open dialogue and speaking with the students, finding out what they enjoyed during high school, what they didn't, getting some feedback, and that's something, I don't know if we'd be interested in doing that, but if we could maybe look into it a little bit more, or you know, maybe have that as part of the agenda for one of our community meetings coming up at the library, it's an idea.
Thank you. Anyone else? Future agenda items? Deborah?
I know over the summer, I guess I'm nitpicking, you know, I'm trying to squeeze every dollar we can out of this budget, but I went over our communication costs and we were discussing our phone bills, and we spent over $200,000 last year. And at that time I requested that we search out, you know, other communication providers to see if we could be more cost effective in this area. I haven't heard an answer on what that research has showed or whether or not we even had the time to investigate it.
Jack Wend is doing that, and that might be one of the proposals for the capital projects, just with our internal phone use. And I know he's looking at a couple of web-based systems rather than the communication system we have presently. But again, that takes a heck of a lot of time, and we should have something for the capital projects committee to look internally at the communication system.
Okay, and we also discussed the internet access. You know, we discussed the misuse of the internet systems along the way. Of course, our concern was the loss of daily manpower due to, you know, excessive use of the internet during work time. And we were going to discuss placing some sort of procedure and to limit, you know, the internet access to just managers. I mean, have you implemented any new procedures in this area, or are we going to, or
I didn't get any feedback from anybody being interested in doing that at this point.
Yeah, we did, Mike.
No, we didn't. The only person, there were two people on the board who had interest in it, but no one else, you know, called me and said that we're interested in that. I'll tell you what I used to tell the teachers and the administrators. The only way to supervise, the only answer to seeing internet use being used properly is to supervise. And, you know, it's taken us years and years. We had, as most of you know, we had the first internet site, you know, homepage in the one of the first homepages in the country. And it took us years to develop this and to get teachers to use it. It's a tremendous tool. And as far as teachers using the internet and employees, they're supposed to be used for professional reasons, and we have our students hopefully using them also as much as possible for research. So I don't know how you would only let someone.
Yeah, I'd like to get although I don't remember that specific conversation at a public session.
It wasn't.
Well, I would like to have a consensus tonight to see if we can look into the possibility, get a recommendation from the superintendent to see if it is a problem. If it isn't a problem, then we'll leave it at that. But if it is or could be, I certainly would like to see some restrictions. It's not only a school problem. It's a problem all over the country. Every business has the same problem, and I would be silly to think that Sachem is not you know, not having that same problem. But I would like to put it out for, let's see what the rest of the board feels about it.
I have no problem doing that. Rob, would you be interested in that?
Yeah, I have no problem looking into it. I mean, if it is an issue. If it's not an issue, I mean, but to hold instructional staff, to not being able to get on sites to utilize it in their program effectively, I'm not really for that. If it's being used appropriately, I have no problem with it. So
I think what it comes down to, it's a supervision issue. I mean, from time to time, you have employees who go off task, and whether it's going to be the internet or at the water cooler or taking walks, people go off task. So it's if it is a supervision problem. I know that I've had some employees in the past who have had some issues with it. You address it, and then it doesn't happen again. I know I've spoken to several people over the course of 10 years, and then it goes away. But it's if there's lack of productivity, somebody has to look at their staff member and then address it as they need to.
And we do have ways of monitoring where folks have been on the Internet. David, are you for looking into this? Yes? No? Deborah? Yes? Well, I'm not, because I know that it's already monitored, so I'm a no. Okay. Charlie, look into it. If you think there's an issue, then we'll come back and discuss it. And any other items? Deborah?
Last board meeting I discussed electives. I wanted to place that on as a future agenda item. And Charlie came back and he said he was looking for some direction. So I thought I would give some direction.
Yeah, I just didn't, you threw out electives as a future, that could mean a number of things, and I think it then turned into a number, you know, some dialogue between board members saying, well, what was that, what does that actually mean?
Okay, I appreciate that. I thought that we could start with possibly a cost analysis in this area, and is our, you know, the taxpayer dollars being expended efficiently, and are we providing, you know, elective programs that, you know, that meet the needs of our students, and are they, you know, taking advantage of them? Now, I did go over some of the electives, and I noticed a drastic drop in enrollment, especially when you have, a phase one of a particular subject, and then it goes into its secondary phase, or B's and C's, whatever you call them. We'll start out in, just for instance, I noticed, you know, regular physics, an AP course, B course. 95 students take that particular course. That's wonderful. But then the following year, when physics C is, you know, afforded, enrollment drops to 10. To me, that's an indicator that people don't, you know, really want to take this type of course. I mean, physics AP is not the only one that it happens in. I mean, it happens in child care studies. You know, you see.
Yeah, you know, I'm still not really sure on what you're.
Deborah, how about if, do you want an overview of the elective?
I mean, we need an overview of our elective programs. Do a cost analysis. I mean, whether they're taking an elective or something, you know, the kid's got to be someplace, and they're in a classroom. If you reduce electives, where are they going to go? I mean,
my point is, Charlie,
we look at the regular point. We have the principals, we have the chairs, we have a district administration look at electives and say, you know, what's the merit of some of these courses, and we make adjustments. We've got, you know, we do these things slow over time. We add things in that we think are going to enhance the program. We take things out. But to do a cost analysis of elective, I'm not sure what that means. Somebody could think that physics AP is an elective because, you know, somebody has filled their science requirements and they're taking a physics AP as an elective. Yeah, but the dividends from a course like that for a student, pull out forever.
At I agree, absolutely. And when 95 students are taking that course, that's wonderful. But when they go into the second phase of physics, you have physics 1 and physics 2, and in physics 2, the student enrollment drops to 10. I just don't know why we're continuing that second part of physics.
Charlie, in that particular example, students wouldn't take both courses. There are two different levels of advanced placement courses. Similarly, in math, we offer two different calculus courses. It might look on paper as though that one follows the other, but they're actually two distinct courses, so students wouldn't enroll in both physics APB and physics C. There are two different AP courses, physics APB and physics APC. They're two distinct courses, though. Students would not generally take both. Generally speaking, they would only have the opportunity to take one advanced placement physics course because you're only taking physics for the first time as, in most cases, a senior, sometimes a junior. So it's not as though there would be a course that you would take in 10th grade and 11th grade and so forth. Typically, a student is taking the living environment course or an earth science course and then a chemistry course, and by the time they get to physics, they're generally taking one course.
Can you explain to Deborah the different types of physics that one course has, the topics that one course may have compared to another course?
Yeah, I don't actually have that breakdown here, but I could certainly get that information to you.
To move this along, thank you. Okay.
He's the assistant to the assistant superintendent, in case anybody wants to know.
So in the election discussion, we can move on, and we don't have to have that as a future agenda item. We'll welcome you back for our program next week.
Yeah, you could have saved us a lot of trouble if you had raised your hand.
We need to fill an administrative course, assignment, then we can move over, Bruce.
The next meeting is Thursday, January 11th, 2007, 8 p.m. right here. Have a happy holiday, folks. Can I have a motion to adjourn to executive session? Who is that? John, second, please. Exec session. Thank you. All in favor?